This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 7, Episode 30, The Long Road. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about the long road to changes. Sometimes the easy wins are the quick ones, but what about the more difficult ones? How do you decide when to go on them? Plus, we answer some questions about the end of the cricket season, how to keep your training going, and how to keep your concentration up when you are wicket-keeping and opening the batting. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's that time of the week again when we talk for half an hour or so about cricket, coaching it, playing it, taking part in the game. My name's David Hinchcliffe. I look after things here. And joining me on the show this week, as they always do, are two very fine cricket coaches. The first of which is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garrett.
How are you? Okay.
Very good, thank you. Enjoying rare sunshine here in the far north.
So I was I was reading some posts on a mate's Facebook, and it was telling me all about the sunshine in Troon of all places. So
there you go.
I assume it's sunny with you.
Yeah, exactly. So tools down, everybody outside. Nothing gets done for a couple of days while summer's here, and then back to normal again when the rain starts.
Yeah, brilliant. Absolutely awesome. It's good. We've had sun in the south here for quite a long time, and I've been watching a lot of cricket on cricket fields that look a bit like the 1976 Test match at the Oval, where it's as as a bear thing. So the ball has run well, and you're getting good value for your shots at the moment down here.
Very nice. Secondly, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School, a man who's been hunting for a room to record in. It's the excitement has been unbearable. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavis.
Hello there. It's all sorted now, all in order.
Oh, thank goodness. Okay, yeah, well, the excitement of trying to get slightly better audio quality. It's
there you go, yeah.
It's and unbearably tense.
It's also like the summer of 76 down here, although I wasn't alive, but Bumble talks about it every time he's on air, so I've heard a lot about it.
I just about was.
No comment on the age thing there. I'll leave that up to a viewer and listening discretion.
Get up to date now and talk a little bit about current challenges for cricketers and coaches. And specifically, I guess, because this time of year, sort of attention starts to turn to more longer-term projects, I suppose, as the season draws to a close and you start thinking about what you're going to do across the winter in the UK. And I was thinking about what often we talk about very easy things we can do to make quick changes and easy wins and quick wins. But I was thinking more about the more difficult things, the things that take more time and there's no easy or quick way around it. So I wanted to tap you guys' knowledge. What do you find are the things that take the longest to make changes about? And how do you help a cricketer to decide whether they want to go down that long path or whether they can work with what they've got?
Well, if I answer the second bit first, in terms of helping a cricketer to get to those decisions, often if you do the review sort of fairly immediately after the season, and looking ahead to that development phase in the winter, it's pretty fresh in the mind about the things that they've struggled with over the course of the summer, or things that could be potential development areas over the course of the winter. And so it'd be fresh in the mind, and often you find that they come to you with those things. And all I do really is I just try and say, I ask them about each aspect of a game. So if we take a batter, for example, and he's played opening the batting, you know, how did you go against fast bowling this year? Yeah, pretty well. You know, I felt like I scored all right. I averaged this, that and the other, blah, 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 blah. Then you go to the areas, you know, the swinging ball. short ball? How do you think you've gone against those? And it's almost a tick box way of going about it. And I think it's a useful exercise to go down, having a look at the different facets of a game that a opening batter is going to have to deal with. And obviously, they have to be able to deal with a ball when it's not swinging around so much. They have to be able to deal with a ball when it starts to spin has come on and it starts to spin. And for me, a lot of the work that we inevitably do in that first part of the winter is based around spin, because certainly in the Northern Hemisphere, people tend to play spin maybe not as well as some of our subcontinent partners and people that we connect with on this show. So I should imagine that probably three quarters of the batting work that I'll do in the first 2 months of the off-season will be based around spin and based around turning spin over, not hitting the bad ball for four, because most people can do that pretty well, but turning the spinners' decent balls into ones, picking out better boundary options rather than just having the ability to whack it. So looking at sweeps, reverse sweeps, how to use the feet effectively. But in young players, I find that the thing that develops last in a lot of young players is their ability to play spin with real confidence.
What about you, Lavers? Do you have a similar experience, or are there other things that you look at that are long roads that you would want a player to think hard about before going down it?
There are certain things which are a little bit trickier to approach and sometimes take a little bit more thought and a little bit more attention to detail when planning how you're actually going to make them happen. Probably with some players, and that this is probably something that more so with some senior cricketers, and especially some senior cricketers in the kind of club environment, is, and this is probably something you've gone through as well, is changing people's beliefs a little bit and trying to have a positive impact on their beliefs and their outlook on how improvement happens and how people do train and how they can get better. I think presenting individual sessions is a fairly quick fix to certain things. And you can kind of set up a session and make it appealing to most people, but there are certain individuals, and I think most teams have a group where there will often be one or two people who are a little bit more hard work and having a long-term view to changing their beliefs and their whole outlook on how they play and train within cricket is something that is a little bit tougher to handle. So that would be one of the trickier areas that needs approaching, and probably something that I'm sure something you've gone through in the last couple of years up at your club in Scotland.
Yeah, that's been an interesting one. That there's definitely a divide between people who want to, you know, the looking towards maybe slightly longer term goals and people who are, you know, as you say, Lavers, going from session to session, and you know, as long as they've got form and fitness, they feel like they're doing everything that they need to do. So yeah, it's cultural change is always a long one. I suppose bowling action changes as well is another one that can take a lot of time to bed in, can't they? Especially if you've got someone who's been bowling in a certain way for a long time, but they want to make some kind of a change. That's a good time to do it. Is when there's a long winter in front of you.
Yeah, and that's something that's probably again a very personal subject or a personal attribute to a bowler, isn't it? Because it's something they've relied upon and something they've done in the same way often for a long period of time, and making a change to that first of all is quite difficult from a physical point of view, but so often it's something that people are quite protective over, and there's a bit of selling involved at the start, really, if I'm honest, and it's something that maybe a bit of discussion together and working out what are we trying to improve, and are the goals of what I see as something as an improvement the same as the goals that you see, and if bowlers are looking to make changes, then ultimately they will have to change something if they do want to improve. But bowling's really tough, isn't it? Because you can't actually. It's quite difficult to see what you're doing as you're doing it, whereas with other skills you can see what your feet are doing, or you can be in you can be analysing whilst you're in the shot to a degree. But bowling's really tough because it's a lot harder to do that. Your focus is very much elsewhere, and you're looking at something in distance, and you're and having an awareness of what you're doing at the same time as what the ball is going to do is really difficult. And that's why we break bowling actions up into different segments, into drills, into different ways of approaching it and analysing it. And obviously, with the likes of pitch vision, whether it's a full system or the app on the phone or whatever, there's a hell of a lot of video footage which comes in really useful when it comes to looking for areas to improve and then feeding back as to how well people are improving.
Okay, let's wrap up this section with a yes-no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more the team want to say. I've got the questions, so let's fire away. First question. Failure is defined by your reaction to it.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question. A coach is a cricket doctor?
No.
No.
Third question. A sneaky stumping is as unjust as a man caddy.
No.
No.
Good stumping, by the way, I thought.
Sneaky. Now it's time for the listeners' questions part of the show. What happens here is, as will be unsurprising to you, is we get a couple of questions sent in to the show, either by listeners to the show or readers to the Pitch Vision Academy website, and we answer those questions, and then at the end of the show we decide which the best question was of the week, and we give that question a prize, which is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. and you can send your questions into us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com, and we've got other ways of getting in touch with us which we'll tell you about towards the end of the show. And John's sent in a question, first of all. And John says, I'm a number five batsman who's had an okay season. Our cricket is nearly finished. We don't have anything left to play for because we can't be promoted or relegated. What do you suggest I do for the last few training sessions of the summer?
Well, first thing I would suggest is that you have a conversation with your coach or your captain and put out the opportunity that you have to have a go at some things that you want to bring into your game over the winter or want to be able to put down the following year when you get back to playing cricket. I think it's a great opportunity, this end of season where you're in that sort of middle zone where there's nothing too much on all the games, to experiment a bit and to project a little bit going forward about what you're going to do. And if that's a collective thing, that's fantastic. You know, if the captain's on board, the rest of the team are on board, then that's great. But even if you just say to your captain, I'd really like to have a go at X, Y and Z, or even just pick one thing to go for those last few games of the season, I think it could be really beneficial in the long term. But it has to be communicated, as we always talk about on the show. It has to be communicated. So what that is very personal to you. It might be personal to the group of players that you've got around. But that communication of your intentions over the next few weeks in practice and possibly in those games coming up can be really have a long-term benefit for next year.
What kind of things do you find yourself pushing players towards, Lavers, at the time of year when there's dead games around and there's still training sessions left?
Yeah, well, I think there are a few different ways you can look at it. I think one of the great things, as Gareth said there, is pushing people into new ideas and new things and skills that they're going to want to use next year, or methods or ways of approaching the game that they're going to want to use at the start of next season potentially, and having three or four games with those ideas under your belt is a really good way to do it. So that's definitely one way I'd look at things. Another thing I have done with a couple of guys is actually go the other way and say, change nothing, but let's really establish ourselves in the level of cricket we're playing. And for some people, that's good, is to keep it very simple and continue to do what you've done, but try and put some really good numbers on the board so that when you look back at the season next April or whenever it might be, April, May next year, you actually look back on it with a lot of belief and a lot of confidence in what you can achieve, because you kept it very simple at the end of this, at the end of the previous season, and did a really good job. So two different ways to look at it, and it's going to depend on the sort of stage of development that an individual's in. Again, you can also look from a slightly different angle of, are we looking to apply new skills to a game, or is it a tactical or a change of method that we're looking to employ? And I think that's another really good way to look at a game. And we had a game recently, probably going back 4, 5, 6 weeks now for the first 11 at school, and we put on an enormous total, and we decided that we wanted to try and challenge ourselves. And what we've done in the past is you might set yourself a different figure or a different total that you're going to try and defend instead, which the opposition don't necessarily know about. We went down a different route, and we said we're going to play this innings without bowling anyone out, and that's our new method, and we're going to have to try and come up with different ways of being creative to take wickets again. And I think just creating different scenarios and different challenges for yourself will only stand you in good stead when you're looking for different skills in the future. And that was a really good challenging day for our bowlers, and something they did really well on the day.
Something that we're going to try this year, as we have a dead game coming up, not on Saturday, but the next Saturday, is we're having an internal game between the players, just so they can have a bit of fun, do things that they wouldn't normally do, but still do it in a game environment. And it gives people a chance to play competitively against each other when they would only be in the nets normally. And you can do something which you wouldn't normally try and do and still, enjoy it. So hopefully, if the weather stays good, we'll be having the West of Scotland Invitation 11 against the West of Scotland All-Stars.
How good will their motivation be within a fixture like that? Because that's often the tricky part, is having all 22 players entering the game motivated to beat the opposition who they know, and not having people cruising through, as it were, or just saying, well, it didn't matter because it was just a bit of fun.
We'll wait and see.
Will they enter that game with a bit of motivation, do you think, because they're playing against each other? Will that raise it a bit?
We'll wait and see. It was very easy to get 22 people. So we'll wait and see on the day. But usually we have a pre-season internal game, which works pretty well. So we'll see how it goes at the end of the season. It's a bit of an experiment. I get the feeling that some guys will be more motivated than other guys, especially if there's any niggle between between players. There's already a couple of guys who said, can you make sure I'm on the opposite team to such and such? And I thought, well, that'll be good when you're bowling and he's batting.
Well, I think great opportunity to introduce either some reward or some consequence, and probably, given the nature of it, I'd say some reward. So have a think about what it could be. And the easy one would be the losers are buying for the winners, I would have thought, or something along those lines. But some kind of reward or consequence is a good way to just add a bit more enthusiasm to what's going on.
Yeah, put something on it. So if someone starts messing around too much, then they say, "Well, hang on a minute, you're going to be out of pocket if you carry on like this."
Absolutely.
Next questions are from Rian, and Rian says, "I'm a wicketkeeper, opening batsman, and would like to work on my ability to concentrate properly." There's two jobs that require a lot of concentration.
Yeah, and I think actually the process that you go through for both of those is fairly similar, particularly I would say when a keeper is standing up to the stumps. When you're a keeper and you're standing up to stumps, I think that because of a time scale between the ball being hit or getting through to the keeper and then going back to the bowl, it is very, very similar, and the distances are pretty similar. It makes that process quite repeatable, and you can transfer from your batting across into your keeping and vice versa. And we've talked about it previously on the show. Concentration is you've got a volume of concentration at the start of the day. It depletes over the course of a day as we use it. Really, the only way to get our concentration back is to sleep. So we need to use that concentration really well. The best players are the ones that find a method to be able to switch down and then switch back up. So as the bowler's a ball's been hit, it's gone the cover, he gets thrown around the mid-off, the bowler walks back to their mark, and the batter finds a way of switching their focus down a little bit, and then as the batter turns, then that focus gets heightened until you're just concentrating on the thing, whether it's the ball or whatever, at the point of release. And the best players have that capacity to do that. The most tricky time to do that, obviously, is when you've got a spin bowler bowling, because the repetition of the ball coming down, the over only takes a minute or so. Somebody like Chris Gayle was unbelievable at getting through an over quickly. And instead of switching up and down every ball, certain players within the England setup would find that they would do it for three balls, then create a diversion after three. So they might walk away from the stumps after three to have that drop it down and then pick it back up again, and then to have that heightened awareness for the next three balls. So there's different ways of doing it. You get some players that use that the box around the crease or the line that a keeper might create behind the stumps as being that physical thing that once they draw that line or once they mark their guard, then that's the time that they switch on. Other people find that they don't need a physical cue to do it, but I'd say standing up and batting are similar time spaces. They're also very similar in terms of the distances that you're receiving the ball on, so they are very transferable. Standing back is a slightly different one. Often when you've got slips in play, it's a different one because you've got those conversations going on, those tactical chats, those inane silly chats that take your mind off of the ball as it goes around the field and back to the bowlers. It's slightly different because of the difference in distance as much as anything else. So again, you know, if you've got somebody there, I used to find it easier to switch down when I had somebody at first slip or second slip. If I didn't have anybody there at, say, the end of a one-day game or in a 2020 game, I would have to create my own downtime, and that was often by motivating others. So I could motivate others and talk to others actually without any focus whatsoever. You know, my ability to talk was fairly natural, so I didn't have to concentrate hugely at that point. But that's how I used it. If you're more introverted, you might have to find a way of getting away from yourself a little bit, and it might involve stretching, or it might involve a little bit of movement in between each ball, which can be your downtime before you get back into your setup for the ball coming from the fast bowler. So there are different ways and means of doing it, but every single one of them requires practice. And the better we can do at practicing outside of a gameplay, the better we become at utilising our concentration and stretching our concentration over a longer time in gameplay. Often, people only practice their concentration in gameplay, and that can be fraught with danger.
Ladies, there's no doubt that some people are better than others. But do you think that is down to just having a more natural ability to manage those things compared to others? Or do you think there are people have greater reserves of concentration than others?
Yeah, I guess the describing something as being a natural ability to do something is always a pretty grey area anyway. But I imagine that early growth and early stages of life equipped some people better to concentrate on things than others. So there will be people who enter into the game of cricket at 9, 10, 11, and they start playing longer games at 13, 14, and for whatever reason, the upbringing they've had and the sport they've played and the education they've had and all these different things will have put them in a position where they're maybe slightly better equipped already, and they can handle those long periods of concentration a little bit better than maybe others can, and it may be that they have a system, but probably don't have a system at that stage. It's probably more than they're more used to concentrating, so they can maybe build up a larger bank of information, and that pool of concentration they have to work through the entire day is maybe a little bit bigger and a little bit lasts a little bit longer because of the experiences they've had. So again, it's just as you would want to give people physical experiences to help them develop as young athletes from a young age. I guess challenging them from that concentration or cognitive point of view as well is something that's not only going to help them from an academic perspective, but it's going to help them in their ability to concentrate within sport or within the other things they're doing in life. So challenging them from a young age, and I'm sure there's a lot of research out there on this kind of thing as well, would be a really beneficial and useful thing for their sport.
The other thing about concentration that interests me is the difference between sort of running out of concentration and there being some kind of a distraction. And there's a difference. One's internal, one's external. And often you hear a batsman walk in, you know, he scored 15 and he gets out in some strange way. And he said, oh, you know, sorry, I wasn't concentrating on that ball and I got myself out. But you think, well, you've only scored 15 runs. How can you possibly run out of concentration? So do the two often get mixed up, or are they the same thing, just with different hats on?
Well, I would say most people are distracted rather than and therefore haven't switched their concentration back up. Right. So they might be dwelling, and often it's around dwelling on the previous ball, whether it's been not a success or a massive success. And it's that refocusing and drawing a line under the previous ball and going into the next ball, which often people don't do, you know. And you only have to look at the amount of dismissals that people have just after reaching a milestone. They relax, they go, oh, thank goodness I've done that. And all of a sudden, they've nicked one the slip or they've chipped one the cover. And that's purely because they haven't refocused, they haven't drawn a line underneath that ball. And, you know, as I think Dermot Reeves said, that, you know, there's 300 balls in a 50-over innings. So there's 300 different matches, different games, different contests within that 300 ball innings, and you have to draw a line under each one, whether you've hit it out of the park or whether you've played and missed. You know, that those things need to be done. So I'd say that is a massive skill, and one that needs to be practiced a lot. You know, especially when you've done well. Actually, so many people get out a ball after they've done something which they're obviously reflecting on, dwelling on in a positive light. And then, you know, equally, when we get to losing our concentration, it going completely, that normally comes when you're massively fatigued, when you've been under a massive period of pressure. And again, you know, going back to my previous comments, that's where we can switch on and switch off and switch on and up and down to be able to maintain that concentration. But I would say the biggest one is around being disturbed and distracted.
Once again, it's time on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show to catch up with Kiati Gulani, who always gives us a fresh perspective on coaching and playing cricket. Hi, Kiati. How's it going?
Hi, I'm fine. And here in India, it's really pleasant, sunny day today. So we are enjoying every bit of it. And it's off today. We are having an Indian festival here. So resting at home.
Fantastic. Okay, well, that gives us a chance to have a little chat about the game. And one thing I wanted to ask you about as a coach was confidence, player confidence. It's a very difficult thing to build up into players. Some guys have it naturally. Some guys need to work on it a bit more. As a coach, how do you find the best ways of building up confidence in players and helping them achieve the best they can be through their mental game?
Yeah, it's really important for a team and for the individual itself to have a self-confidence. As because if team's overall confidence is a reflection of the individuals who combine to make up the team. And if one player is lacking in, you know, having self-confidence, so is their team. So it's really important for the coach to, you know, build up that confidence level in the team and in the individual. So there are many ways. That's how we, you know, build up the player's confidence. One is like, you know, creating situations of success. So like we give them the drills in which we make sure that the player should succeed and become the hero. As his teammates, you know, give him praise and positive reinforcement, he will have gained a boost in his battle with self-confidence. So it's no matter whatever the drill we choose, it's really the outcome is fixed to allow the player to, you know, succeed and become the hero. And the other way, what we do is like make the player with the low self-confidence become a vocal leader. A coach should create a, you know, vocal leader position in which he would, you know, place as the most, you know, challenged player who is having less, you know, what we call self-confidence, become the hero and to lead all the drills and stretches in practice. And this will make the player, you know, uncomfortable in the start. But after a few weeks, you will notice a big rise and positive rise within the player's confidence level of speaking up and on the court and off the court. So, and there are other ways also, I would say, it's like, you can also say like a mistake is only a lesson in disguise. Players hate, we all know that players hate making mistakes, no matter the skill level is high or low. But once a mistake is made, there are only two options. It's like pout or learn. So I make sure that when I'm running a camp or, you know, personal training a player, I always make sure to remind the player that when they make a mistake, they should figure out the lesson in it. And instead of getting upset, think about what you learned and how to begin improving on that. Once I get players to understand how to take the lesson from the error, I notice an extreme change in their confidence levels overall. So these are the few, you know, ways to build up players' self-confidence. And as coaches, there are many ways to build confidence. And as a coach is willing to be patient with a shy or timid player in order to get the most out of him or her.
How important is the role of other players in building each other's confidence up? So it's not just down to the coach, but everybody is helping to build each other up. And what can a player do to help build up the confidence of other players?
Yeah, it's really important for other players also to, you know, build up and help the one who is really, you know, facing the challenge. It's really important because they have to be on the field together. So when the other players will, you know, praise him, go and talk to the player who is really facing that problem and to, you know, go and ask him the questions. What do you think about the situation which is right now? So what do you think and how you see that problem and how to deal with that? That will, you know, really make him involved and help him build up the confidence. So it's really important for the other players as well to, you know, get involved in all these situations.
And that is the end of the show for another week. We are going to leave you in a moment, but before we do that, we just need to decide on the winner of this week's competition, the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had two questions, one from John about what to do at the end of the season when you haven't got any more motivation, and Rian's question about working on concentration. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I like Rian's question on concentration. I think it was a cracking question. Obviously, I'm a bit biased at being the keeping angle of it, but I thought that was a really good question. You know, managing distraction, managing to maintain your concentration over a long period of time are two skills that I think everybody can benefit from.
Congratulations to you. And Gareth, if somebody was listening to the show and they were thinking, I wouldn't mind having my question answered, and I definitely wouldn't mind winning the online coaching course, how could they get in touch with us?
Well, they could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. You can also get us through social media. Our Facebook is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. And our Twitter is @PitchVisionAcad. You can find us hanging out in all of those places. If you want to download the show directly or stream it from your computer, or you want to get any of the old show notes from any of the shows going right back to episode one, then you can go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for all the details on how to do that. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, guys.